Welcome to Ono, Ross, and Carrie, the show where we don't just report on fringe science, spirituality, and claims of the paranormal, but take part ourselves.
When they make the claims, we show up so you don't have to. I'm Ross Blotcher.
And I'm Carrie Poppy.
Hey, Carrie.
Hey.
And we're back at Rhythmia.
For your plant medicine ceremony. This is why you came back, everybody.
This is what everyone's been waiting for. What happened to Ross when he took ayahuasca?
Did he die? Is he dead?
So as we've already told you, there are 4 days of ayahuasca.
Yes.
I didn't realize that going in. Did you?
I didn't either, I don't think. I do remember them telling me, oh, we do it multiple times and you can do it as many or as few as you want to. I mean, it's not like they make you do it, but there's like a pretty strong social pressure to do all four nights.
It's the curriculum you're following. And to do any of them, you have to pay for all of them, which is $300.
Right.
I'll tell you who didn't know that there would be four nights of ayahuasca. My wife.
My wife.
She was not happy about that. But let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
We are now ready for our first ayahuasca ceremony.
Yes, we are.
I am
really trying to mentally prepare because I'll be taking a homeopathic tincture of ayahuasca and it's going to be just as strong as regular ayahuasca. And
are you nervous?
I'm going to be seeing visions. I'm going to be seeing my whole life played out. Maybe I'm going to reunite with my soul.
Because Jerry told you it's every bit as potent.
It is exactly the same.
Exactly
experience.
The same.
So
words
I'm
have
like,
meaning.
Holy shoots. I can't believe all this. I mean, we'll come back to you in a second, Ross.
Okay,
but
okay.
I was having just a really important, deep spiritual experience.
Yeah. So I found you outside the main lodge hall. I wish I had a better name for that structure.
I know, we keep calling it...
Can we call it a temple?
Sure.
It's kind of a temple.
Is that offensive? Who knows? Okay.
I don't know. It's
probably not.
It's the main area where things happen.
How about a pultum? It's a temple, but like switched around.
All right. Sure. But it's this long building that is shaped like a longhouse, but it's got Asian touches to it architecturally.
It looks kind of like a Japanese tea house, the kind that's like in a botanical garden.
Yeah, it's not like a full pagoda. There's not multiple levels of roof, but there's that first level. So think of it as these two squares that are kind of attached by a rectangle in the middle.
Right.
Making this long, roughly eye-shaped building as seen by the crow from above. So everyone's waiting outside of that. One thing I really had wished we would be able to see is just the preparation of the ayahuasca.
Yes.
And that was shielded from us.
It was, even though it kind of felt like we were watching it. We'll get into this, but when we get in there, I kind of thought I was watching the ayahuasca being cooked. It wasn't.
Yeah.
I think it was incense.
And I think earlier I'd gotten a sense that there were people inside doing preparation stuff. And I thought, oh, I wish I could be part of this part. But no, not so much. So everyone was waiting outside in their mostly white garb.
Yeah. So we were told that ideally you wear white to the ceremony if you've got it. If you don't, no big deal. But we were both like, gosh, wish we had packed white. Wish we'd been told.
Yeah. Apparently we don't wear white unless we're doing live gazing sessions.
Right.
In which case we bring the white.
Because then you have to wash it with all the other colors and it's just such a hassle.
Yeah, indeed. So we wore something else.
Yeah, I think I wore gray.
I had a orangish red shirt and my blue pajama bottoms, kind of not a checker pattern, like a plaid.
Plaid, but with big stripes.
Right.
Big squares.
So I wandered up and they want you to take your shoes off for this place. So there's a big collection of everybody's shoes as people are discarding those. And we're waiting kind of on the edge. There's this wooden lip to the building, is sort of a deck that runs around it. So people are kind of standing up on the deck and they're having conversations. Everyone's comparing about how nervous they are. I wasn't feeling as nervous for this as I had for, say, our holotropic breath work.
Is that because you knew that you would be taking a non-homeopathic dose? You'd be taking way more and so it wouldn't be as effective as mine?
Right, exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think it was just because there was no element of performance anxiety. I knew this was going to do its thing. I had no doubt of that. There was nothing I really had to accomplish or do other than just, you know, let it take its effect. So I was like, all right, let's see what happens.
I was surprised by how little you were worried.
Yeah.
But yeah, you didn't really seem very worried. I remember saying that to Drew, texting him, like, how come Ross is like way less worried about this than holotropic breathing, which is not good.
Yeah, maybe my priorities are misaligned there. But eventually they open up the doors, they start letting us in, and there's a little checklist. They want to make sure that we had signed up, and they want us to give them our little tokens. And oh, rats, I forgot my token.
Right.
Had to run back to my room, which thankfully wasn't too far away, grab my token, run back. And you had found a mattress for us.
Yeah, I had found a couple mattresses side by side. And at first we thought, oh no, we missed like the part where people claimed their spots, because someone said something about that.
Yeah, someone spoke about, oh, we've already picked our spots next to each other. And we're like, oh no.
Wait. Oh no, we have to be next to each other. This is for a podcast.
Yeah.
But we were able to find two, maybe not in the most wanted real estate in the eye.
So if you're facing the building from the side with the hammocks where we were usually approaching it from, we were on the right hand square.
End.
And we found a little corner where we couldn't really see too well what the shamans were doing over mm-hmm. in the center of the rectangle connecting the two squares. And then on the left-hand side, that's where it's open to the air. There's no doors.
Right. I think open. That's the more coveted spot. I think that's what had been
I think
taken.
People had, right, already claimed spots on that side.
So as we're walking in, a young man who will come to find out is the shaman is walking around with a pot and burning aromatics in it and kind of wafting the smoke at us as he passes.
Yeah, he stops by and purposefully kind of, here's some smoke for you.
Yeah.
Pushes it your way.
So I asked the shaman, what is that? Is that frankincense? And he was like, Okay, little girl. And then he said what it was, but I don't remember what it was.
We exaggerated that slightly. It was copal.
Copal, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's where the Mormon god comes from.
No. He lives on Kolob. Hythe to Kolob.
To Copal.
apparently, it's, I think, a sap found in South America, and they burn it for spiritual ceremonies, and I guess it smells something like frankincense, but it was
pretty good.
Pleasant enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's getting
and
us prepared
right,
with that.
And you're right, we totally exaggerated that, but he did make a face that was like, and a voice that was meant to communicate that I had made a very bad guess.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, we went inside, and as I was walking in, they knew who I was. I was that one person who's taking the very strong, very potent homeopathic tincture.
And they kept emphasizing this. Everyone wanted to clarify it. Now, you'll be taking the
tincture.
Yes. Yeah, like I think someone came up at one point and just said, okay, is anybody here taking the tincture? Like, yeah. Let's, you know, not try to call out the one person that we know is doing
right,
this.
Right. And we did come to find out, literally, there was only one.
Out of, we're still not sure, 65 to 70 people. So imagine these big open rooms all connected to each other. There are floors that, it's wooden underneath, but they've covered it with these interlocking tiles, styrofoamy tiles, not styrofoam.
Like at a yoga studio?
Yeah, like a thick yoga mat, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then on top of those, there's a bunch of mattresses. So there's just, you know, everywhere they can kind of put a mattress to seat all these people. They've got one. They've covered it in a fitted sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a tan blanket on it.
That you might see in like a hospital bed.
And one guy came by and very helpfully said, hey, pro tip, everybody, you'll want to take this blanket and kind of pre-unfold it, lay it out accordion style so you can easily pull it over yourself once mm-hmm. the drug starts, because you might be confused. No one says drug once the plant medicine takes effect.
Right, right.
So you can easily pull it over you because you might get a little confused. That was great advice.
Yeah.
Words to live by. So.
I mean, I know me on the tincture, it just became impossible to lift anything.
We also had a pillow and a blue bucket. Everyone had their own blue bucket.
Our friend.
My bucket looked just like everybody else's, but this one is my own.
Right. It's your amigo.
And yeah, we were taught to call it our amigo.
We'll tell you about that in a sec.
Yeah, I think you already know where that's going. We also get a roll of toilet paper because every now and then you need to
blow your nose,
clean up a little bit. Yeah.
Yep.
Don't put the toilet paper
in your amigo.
In the amigo, because later on we want to empty the amigos out into nature and give back what comes out of us. And not so good having the toilet paper in there. So just make a little separate pile.
Which we did.
And I got to say, just all of these mattresses lined up do make you think
of
momentarily.
Heaven's Gate.
feels a little bit like a suicide cult. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
And everybody wearing white. A few people not wearing white. We weren't the only ones.
When you say just a little bit, you're not being hyperbolic or facetious. Like literally just a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like 20%.
Also in this building, there's a lot of interesting artwork up.
Mostly paintings.
Like on the other side, there's some photographs. But yeah, on our side, it was not only paintings, but like very occultic imagery. Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Right across from me, there was like a woman wearing a long stole or robe, and she has her arms outstretched, and above her is a floating pentagram.
And then a UFO? Was that on hers too?
Oh, did that have a UFO? I'm not sure.
One of them had a UFO.
Okay. But over to the left was a very interesting one that had like a Baphomet goat head.
Right.
And it had a spiraling logo above it, and it had a pentagram, and it was very like spacey meets occulty.
And then there was another one of a snake.
Both of those were very dark too, so the image was just kind of lightly painted on top of black.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, this is exactly what our Christian communities warned us about years ago, places like this.
Yeah, sure.
So we got cozy and waited until they told us it was time for...
Time to come in and meet the shaman.
A little huddle, a little introduction.
Yeah, we'll just do a quick little talk, you know? So we're thinking, okay, good.
I love quick little talks.
Yeah, you know, we'll go over the instructions. Obviously, Jerry went through them pretty thoroughly, so this will take a good 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, we know what we need to know. Grab your pillows if it helps. Okay, grab my pillow. We go, and we all go to the center connecting rectangle of this building and form a semicircle, multi-layered semicircle around.
Sit down cross-legged. And
in front of the shaman, there's an altar there. Mm-hmm. Well, mostly there's like a couch.
Right.
Where the shaman sits and the shaman's assistant. And they've got a little altar off to the side that has some bottles.
Pinkish, reddish bottles.
Yeah, and we think, ooh, that must be the active ingredient
over there. Is that the ayahuasca, or is the thing in front of him the ayahuasca? Because he also has like a pot that's kind of simmering on a hot plate in front of him.
And from all the imagery we've seen online, it looks like they boil the ayahuasca plant itself inside of this little pot. So keep trying to crane my neck and look inside this pot, but I don't see anything in there. Turns out it's empty.
And just to clarify, ayahuasca is a brew made out of the Banisteriopsis caapi vine.
Hmm.
Yeah, and some other stuff.
The sacred vine, you might say.
Yeah, or the grandmother, you know, as we all know her and could have just called her this whole time and everyone would have known what was going on.
During Q&As, people ask like, so about the yahe, and you're trying to figure out what we're talking about for a while. I'm like, oh, they're just using a different term for ayahuasca.
Okay. Yeah, different little nicknames for her.
So many names.
So it turns out this talk is a little longer than we thought it would be. And it's... It's quite slow, and he laughs to himself.
So this is our shaman. It's the same guy who had coated us with copal smoke earlier.
A lot.
What should we call him?
So we'll call this guy Gene.
He was a tall fellow, maybe close to 6 foot, 5'10", 6", somewhere
couldn't
in that range.
I'm not sure.
Caucasian male.
Sandy blonde hair.
I would say early 30s, maybe.
Oh, I would have thought he was in his 20s.
Mid-late 20s, early, somewhere in that range.
28 and a half.
Yeah, and he's got almost a flat top, shortcut hair, but he's wearing...
Like a robe, a woven robe.
Yeah, a long woven shirt robe combo that has a lot of black and white stripes, but then there's colored stripes in the middle with red, orange, and blue, and he's wearing lots of beads around him, so he kind of rattles when he walks because he's got these hanging beads.
That's right, yeah.
Or shells.
Yeah, I think they were little tiny shells, and they were noisy.
He can't sneak up on you.
It's worth mentioning, I think most, if not all, maybe all of the helpers were white.
Yeah, on this day, I believe so, and generally.
Well, I mean, which is interesting, like this is definitely a ceremony that came out of the indigenous peoples of this culture, and I'm sure they don't look super fondly on this 20-something white shaman coming in and bringing in a bunch of white people, but who knows?
They would allude regularly to their taita.
Right.
I guess it means like papa, something like that. Right. But their instructor. Progenitor. It's like your... guru, essentially, like the one who trains you. And so it seems like they've all studied under someone who is a native resident and part of the long-standing tradition.
That's certainly how they made it sound.
And they've referred to this guy who's old as the hills, you know, like over 100 years old, but we never saw him.
And then at one point, of course, they had Mugenda, who appears to have grown up in the United States.
He lived in Detroit for a while. Yeah.
So I don't even know, where his originally deal was. From. Yeah.
But his specialty was Iboga. Yeah, so he gave us just the whole spiel again, everything that we needed to be aware of, as if we'd never talked to Jerry.
Yes.
Essentially.
And much slower than Jerry did it. And all of the instructions we got, I could tell you right now in 5 minutes. It would be very easy.
And he would punctuate his sentences with long, meaningful pauses.
Followed by a soft chuckle to himself. And it wasn't like an evil cackle or anything. It was just a sort of, I'm living in this moment and life is funny sort of chuckle.
So every sentence, it didn't have necessarily any humor content, but the sides of his lips would kind of curl up in a knowing grin and so it was over an hour.
It was 65 minutes.
Oh, that's over now. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. You timed it, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he just gave us everything we needed to know. And then he would just kind of pause for a while. And then maybe he'd say something that was a restatement of what he just said. And finally, toward the end, he would turn to other people. You have anything to add?
Which was exactly like holotropic breathing.
It really was. Let's contextualize this forever. And then he'd say, does anyone have any questions? And Carrie and I are looking around like, if you have any questions, I'll kill you.
I know. I'm sure that your questions were legitimate an hour ago, but now they should be stuffed down inside yourself. It went on for so long that there was a guy who fell asleep and started snoring.
Right.
Poor guy, because then his wife had to like poke him awake and you could tell he was really embarrassed. And
right.
Everybody was sort of softly laughing at his...
In good humor.
But... Yeah, yeah. But at his snoring. Oh, gosh. So Jean at one point turned to Kitty next to him, who would be his assistant, and asked her if she has anything to add. And she says, no, that was perfect, actually, which it wasn't. And then she says that she's a Reiki master, and so she might do Reiki over us as she comes by.
They also explained another drug that we'd be taking, but we'll tell you about that in just a minute.
Yes. And they told us that the shamans are doing the medicine along with us.
Wild.
And I kind of knew about this. I knew that like the shaman, him or herself, the central figure takes it along with you.
Okay.
And I figured in a place like this where your whole selling point is that you're a hospital and you can take care of me no matter what.
You're going to have someone sober there. Right.
Also, you have a homeopathic tincture. If you insist on everyone taking the quote-unquote ayahuasca,
and it's exactly the same experience, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, no. Everybody in this room will be taking some of the medicine.
Yeah, the non-homeopathic medicine, except for yours truly.
He also introduced us to some of the implements of the trade. There's this fan that's made out of leaves attached to each other, and they call it a wira, and they... can kind of fan that over you. So that makes a lot of noise. And then there's this mixture they keep like in a, it looks like a sarsaparilla bottle to me, but it's got alcohol in it. I guess the only alcohol approved on the campus, called Chandu. And it was something that they can then imbibe and then blow out of their mouth at you in your face.
We're not spitting on you.
Yeah, right. We're not spitting on you. And close your eyes when we do it. We'll warn you.
Always a good warning.
You don't want to get it in your eyes because it's alcohol. It will sting. So we've gotten plenty of context now.
Oh, but wait, there's more, Ross.
Uh-oh.
So when he is certainly run out of things to say, he has to be done. He has to be done. He sits and he thinks a long time. And then he says, is anyone afraid of snakes?
Oh, right. Yes.
And I raise my hands and maybe like 10 other people raise their hand. He chuckles to himself and then says, see, I like to ask this every time because...
This really is the cadence.
Yeah. Because Mother Ayahuasca often comes to us as a snake. Okay, got it. Snake. She's a snake. Got it. Okay.
But so she also can appear as a tiger.
Okay, got it. Thanks. Tiger, snake. Done.
Or
oh,
a jaguar.
Okay, got it. So a big cat, snakes, no problem.
And also, he didn't say mountain lion. What was it? It was another word for a mountain
cougar?
Lion. Cougar. I don't know, but a mountain lion, essentially. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right. We'll be on the lookout for Mother Ayahuasca.
No problem. And then he tells us in that same slow pace, you know, not to be afraid. You can't actually be hurt by her. She loves you. Go toward her. If something's mm-hmm. difficult, always mm-hmm. go toward it. So if you're afraid of snakes, how awesome that she came to you as a snake. And I'm like, I get it. I get it. I wish I hadn't said I was afraid of snakes. We'd all just not put our hands up. We wouldn't have to listen to this.
But yeah, he's doing an overview of the different types of journeys we might experience. It's like, we had a mandatory class on this.
And then he tells us this one is actually better tasting than some of the other ones.
Huh, okay.
Some of the other ayahuasca brews. So.
Yeah, we've been warned it may not taste great.
So with that 65-minute talk... We get to go back to our mats.
Mm-hmm. We lay down and then we've been prepared. We're going to be not called up one by one, but we can get up and get in line. And there's four stations, two in that center area next to the shaman and one on each wing where we can receive rapé.
Which we mentioned in a previous episode.
Which is spelled R-A-P-E, but there's an accent over the E.
Right.
So good luck Googling that.
So we get in line, and I don't even know if I can take that. So I mean, because we're told that it's a tobacco mixture, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, my medicine doesn't prevent me from, I mean, I don't smoke, but I've never heard that I can't smoke on this medicine.
And the way they're going to be administering it is they have this long cylindrical pipe, a long tube, essentially, that has a little crook neck at the end, a little right angle, and a little tube that goes up, and they're going to stick that tube up right under your nostril, and then blow some of this lightly burning rapé into your nostril.
So we're in this line, and the line is not that long, but very slow.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like waiting for Dumbo.
Oh, the ride at Disneyland? Okay.
Always very slow.
Kitty is on our side, right. So we're lining up in front of her. So you get on the pillow in front of her, and she talks to you briefly.
At first, we're like, why is this so slow? Like, what happens on that pillow?
Yeah, yeah. Why are we standing in this line forever? And we see one woman walk back to her mat, and her face is just red, and her eyes are streaming. It looks like she's been crying for an hour or something.
Right, yeah. And, I thought, like, oh, man, that smoke must be intense.
Yeah.
But yeah, poor thing. She was also sitting right next to the line. So everyone's just kind of side-eyeing her. Is that girl okay? And she probably just would like everybody to stop looking at her. But finally, we get up to the front of the line. I went before you, right?
Right.
Okay, so I went up and I asked Kitty, I'm taking the tincture today. Is it okay for me to take this? And she said, yeah, you can still take the rapé. And I'm like, oh, cool. Okay. I kneel down before her,
mm-hmm.
and she takes her kind of corncob pipe type thing you were describing, puts it under my right nostril first, and she says, try to block off the back of your throat and don't inhale. I'll do all the work. So yeah. I'm like, okay. So I kind of like doing a light exhale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she blows ever so slightly, and a torrent of smoke goes up my nostril and overwhelms my brain. And she's told us that it'll travel up your nasal passage, over the crown of your head, back over all the way to the base of your skull. And I feel that happen, but
and
super
it's
fast.
Supposed to awaken your frontal chakra, your third eye, and your, what is it, crown chakra.
Right.
And so it prepares you for the ayahuasca,
journey.
Right?
Your tincture journey.
It opens you up, makes you receptive.
But oh my gosh, I thought like, oh my God, this must be what cocaine's like. Like it was so painful.
Going up your nose.
Oh, it hurts so
much of it.
Bad.
And she does it twice for each nostril.
I was like, oh, can you hold on? And I like grab my nose and she's like, that's okay. Take as much time as you need. And I'm thinking, well, this is why this line's
so long. She's got toilet paper
long.
There so you can clean out your nose if you need to.
But yeah, no wonder that line's so slow. I mean, someone is blowing smoke up your nose. Checks out now.
Yeah, I was going to say literally, but that's not a phrase, blowing smoke up.
Just literally.
Smoke up someone's nose.
So then she moved it. Finally, I was like, okay, I'm ready. But I wasn't even ready. I just wanted to, just knew like I can't hold up this line forever. So I said I was ready.
Do what you got to do.
Yeah, exactly. She puts it under my left nostril. She blows. I can tell she's trying to blow so gently because of my reaction, which I'm sure is everyone's. She blows like so softly. It fills up my head. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Okay, cool. And stumble back. And I did not expect how like immediately you have a serious effect.
Yeah.
I felt like woozy and lightheaded and like high from tobacco.
Yeah, and you were saying that this felt analogous to being on marijuana.
Yeah. I was like, what the heck? And I went and sat down and you went up.
Yeah, so I went up and she scoops this out of her hand and she interviews you briefly and asks you like a couple questions just to make sure you're all prepared. But yeah, she scoops this up out of her hand and the râpé itself is this brownish, greenish, grayish mixture.
Yeah, pretty gross.
Yeah, and they say it's a bunch of herbs that have been burnt together. Mm-hmm. And so she puts it up each nostril. Oh, okay, okay. All right. And then, you know, I tried to hold it all in, but went back to the mattress. And then you're busy just blowing snot out that's laced with this stuff.
It looks like charcoal coming out of your nose. It's so gross.
And I tell Carrie, yes, I did already note like a pronounced hit to my vestibular system.
Yeah, it was really funny. I'm like a little woozy and lightheaded. And Ross is like, yes, I feel my vestibular system sort of out of fuck. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm losing my balance.
I'm losing my balance. So yeah, it felt like being a tipsy, but it wore off very quickly.
It did. It took like 10 minutes. Probably.
Yeah, if even for me.
And there's no gastrointestinal involvement.
Nope. Yeah, it's all in your head.
It's all heady. Yeah, boy, that was wild. I did not expect that out of the râpé. And you also said that the smell reminded you of cat litter.
Oh, yes, that's true. It did.
Oh, yeah. And this is where I first realized, oh, this is so much like communion.
You're waiting for the priest or shaman or what have you to administer this to you.
And in this part, you like kneel down for it, which is sort of like the Catholic, you mm-hmm. know, bowing a bit for your wafer or whatever. And then later when you go to get the drink, it's even more like communion.
So we sat there waiting again, just wondering, okay, are they preparing this? What's
Jesus
going on?
Jesus Christ. This thing started at 5:30. It's now 7:35 and no one has taken any ayahuasca.
Right.
And what?
So then we'll hear little noises happening over to our right. We're up against a wall and the shaman's over to our right, but there's kind of a wall and a lot of glass in between. So I kept leaning forward off my mattress, saying, well, what are they doing? I want to observe this thing. And so I was telling Carrie, oh, they're smoking cigarettes. And sure enough, the shaman is taking drags from what looks like a cigarette of some sort, and then blowing the smoke onto a pitcher of the ayahuasca. And he's also doing kind of chants and stuff like that. No one really gets close to that process.
I'm starting to put something together about this shaman. During the introductory talk, he told us the only way out is through.
But that was Kitty who said that.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, and now you watch him smoke a cigarette. We got some strong Scientological vibes going on here.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yeah, because we both gave each other this knowing glance when Kitty said, the only way out is through. Callback.
And yes, we realize other people who aren't L. Ron Hubbard say that, but it's a strong Scientology reference for us.
For sure. So finally, they do say, okay, we're going to call people up. Go ahead and form a line. They bring up our group first. So they come over to our wing and have everybody get in line. So there's two lines and there's two people, Kitty and the shaman, Gene, serving the Amazonian tea. We each take our turns. You and I are next to each other.
Yeah, we kept doing that little dance where we're like, oh no, after you, you go in front of me so that we two can be next to each other, which is not necessary, but it's very important to us.
So they had a small cup.
Yeah, kind of the size of like two shot glasses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like a very large shot glass. Mm-hmm. And so they filled it with, I'd say somewhere between 3 and 4 fingers worth of this brownish, almost purplish liquid. Mm-hmm. That was the ayahuasca. And I was watching carefully between like, oh, what are they doing with this glass? And they would rub the edge of it to make it ever so slightly more sanitary with like a cloth.
Because you're all using the same glass.
Right, before handing it to the next person. So I got my ayahuasca.
I think I got mine first.
Yes.
I don't mean to brag.
Okay.
But I was getting the stronger
dose.
You want
to tell people about your tincture?
Well,
it's not stronger. It's the same exact same experience.
It's exactly the same, but it's also better.
Okay.
Because with homeopathy, less is more. So the less you have, the more you have.
have. So actually, the people listening to this who have never even been near ayahuasca, you had the most potent ayahuasca.
And they assured us about it. There were 7 parts per million ayahuasca in your tincture.
In my tincture.
So how'd they deliver that to you?
So as I walked up, Kitty was my communion officiant. Mm-hmm. And she saw me and she recognized me and she said, ah. And she turned around and she grabs the tincture and it's in this little dark brown metal bottle, kind of mm-hmm. like what you picture at an old timey pharmacy. But on it, it says something like Rhythmia tincture. It doesn't say ayahuasca on it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
She shakes that up and she says, put 10 sprays under your tongue. So I spray it under my tongue 10 times and 10 sprays actually gets like a fair amount of liquid. So now I'm like, okay. And my journey begins, Ross.
Yeah, immediately you fall on the ground.
Oh my God, the snakes just everywhere.
That would have been hilarious if you just drop on the ground like, oh my goodness, the snakes.
I really wonder if at that point they would break character and be like, honey, you didn't even take it. That stuff's just not even.
This is psychosomatic. This,
yeah, you guys, that's just like some cheap local alcohol or water.
Okay, so you returned humbly to your mat. Mm-hmm. I then took my cup of proffered ayahuasca, and it's the closest thing I can say, it's kind of like prune juice.
Okay.
It's a very, again, brownish, purplish mixture, very much opaque.
Kind of like mud, but not quite that thick.
Not that thick, yeah. And it was, like a earthy prune juice. And okay. I'm okay with prune juice, so I'm okay with this too. I was all like, right. All right, not too bad. Some people were kind of washing their mouths out. I didn't feel the need to do that. I also walked back to my mat, though I stopped to use the bathroom.
Oh, that's right. So I knew that we took it at about the same time. I come back to the mattress, and you're not there. And I was like, oh my God. I had one job. My only job in all of Costa Rica was to make sure Ross doesn't die, and he's not even here.
No,
oh my
gone.
God. Oh my God. Oh my God. And I like sat down on my mattress and I'm like, okay, just don't freak out yet. Just wait to freak out. I'm freaking out. Don't freak out. Don't freak out. Wait to freak out. And then you came back. You were peeing.
Yeah. Want to empty the system before doing this thing.
That sounds harrowing, Ross. But you know what's not harrowing?
Puppies.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Cool. Now back to our show. No, I was going to say Squarespace.
Oh, that was actually the first thing I wanted to say, but you know.
Then you second guess yourself. And you know what? You should never second guess yourself because 90% of the time, this is a fact, 90% of the time, the answer is puppies.
Yeah, right. But with Squarespace, you can turn your cool idea into a new website. You can blog or you could publish content.
Mm-hmm.
All of this with a beautiful website.
And this episode is brought to you in part by Squarespace. So why not head over there and see all the great tools they can give you to make your website beautiful.
Yeah, like, you could sell products and mm-hmm. services of all kinds.
Any kind. Maybe you want to sell those big mouth Billy Basses, mm-hmm. you know, where you push the button and he's like, here's a little song I wrote. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Maybe you want to sell those.
Don't worry. Be happy.
Be happy. Maybe you want to sell those? You can. Well, maybe you can't because they might be copyrighted or patented or something. But the point is, you could sell them on the deep web with Squarespace.
Is it the deep web?
No, probably not.
It's the legal, legitimate web. Mm-hmm. You can do anything that you want to there that's legal. Okay, people, let's keep it clean. You could announce an upcoming event or a special project.
You could do anything you gosh darn please. And Squarespace does all this by giving you beautiful, customizable templates created, get this, by world-class designers.
That's the best class.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's universal class designers, but they're busy.
Yeah, and theoretical. We don't know who else is out there.
Quantum.
There's also e-commerce functionality, so you can sell stuff, and they'll set you right up with a cart. You don't have to be a crazy programmer. But if you are a crazy programmer or even a sane programmer,
then have at it.
Yeah, you've also got all those tools available
just
to you.
Just head out of that WYSIWYG and into the HTML, and
hey-o.
There you are. They have a new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions.
There's free and secure hosting that comes with your account.
And there's nothing to patch or upgrade ever. Plus, ding dong, 24/7 award-winning customer support. That was me ringing the doorbell to go into customer service.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you clarified that.
Thank you.
So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code OHNO, O-H-N-O, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
That's squarespace.com and enter code OHNO.
All right.
All right.
And back to our show. So laid down is a little cool. So you got to pull up that handy blanket and you sit and wait because it takes over an hour generally for ayahuasca to start taking its effect.
So interesting, because Jerry told someone who asked that this whole ceremony would last 2 hours.
Where would that number have come from?
I don't know.
I can't even think of a part of this that you could isolate and call 2 hours.
Here's my guess. Maybe your first drink to where your first drink wears off, but then you keep drinking. No, because you did that sometimes. Okay. So maybe it's 2 hours before we actually let you drink it.
Maybe. Because that's true.
That does seem to be about true.
Yeah. So for whatever time, we have no idea how long this is going to go. We are waiting on the mattress and they turn the lights down and you're just kind of waiting in the dark to see what happens.
And we're not supposed to talk, but we're kind of whispering and we're in a corner where we can whisper a little bit.
There's one guy to the right of me.
And one guy to the left of me.
I'm closing my eyes every now and then and I see...
Well, first you thanked me for being there with you.
Ah, well, thank you again.
You're welcome.
It was very nice to have you there keeping an eye on me. And
thank you for keeping an eye on me while I was on my journey.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Well, I would close my eyes and I'd be kind of questioning, you know, you see just those dancing shapes on the back of your eyes.
Yes.
It's not direct photons hitting your retinas. It's directly the brain generating images, mm-hmm. but also kind of sensing the light outside of your eyes working its way through your eyelids. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're just questioning all of this and none of it is pure black. It's like this kind of cosmic microwave background radiation speckling.
Right.
Ever so slightly different.
That for me is usually like gray hatch marks.
Oh, hatch marks. Interesting. It's kind of cloudy for me usually.
Okay.
Yeah, over time, as we get like to that hour mark, I see little flourishes. So every now and then it'll feel like there's been a little light that has pierced the clouds and is hitting me directly. Like, whoa, a little flash of like diamond or a light. And then I'm seeing colors start to dance around and it'll be green to yellow to red and there'll be intricate shapes. And so these are building in intensity. And at first, of course, I'm wondering, okay, is that just my imagination?
Right.
And then the real palate cleanser with ayahuasca I found is that you can just open your eyes and it won't overtake the vision of what you're seeing.
Ah, right.
You're a little like drunkish as it sets in. Otherwise, you see yourself in the world. Okay, we're reestablished. Close your eyes. And then these patterns start emerging again.
So that makes sense why they like you to do it at night. Mm-hmm. So that you like all you can focus on is that visual stuff.
Totally makes sense. Yeah, that's what I'd been wondering. Is this a VR experience or an AR experience? Does it like augmented reality take over what you're seeing and augment the world? Or is it you have to be in this kind of closed mode, you know, where you're seeing blackness and it's on top of that? It turns out it's the latter, at least for me. That seems to be most everybody's situation.
So you kept leaning over to me and saying nothing was happening for a while. And then you closed your eyes and opened them back up. And I was doing like a snake dance to try to make you think I was a snake. And you played along, but I don't think that you thought I was a snake.
Yeah, you didn't fool me.
God damn it.
So slowly these shapes started to become more intricate. And it was a lot like what you see with the artwork where you have, it's almost like a spirograph of just these lines overlapping each other, very intricate patterns, details upon details. So it's starting to get richer and richer and they're, okay, it's happening now.
So Kat was walking around and she was waving some leaves over certain people's heads and for a couple minutes and then she'd stop. And she also was picking them, I don't know, like as if they were chosen by the cosmos. It wasn't like, oh, this person and the person next to them. It was like, this person, and now I'm drawn to someone 15 people away. Oh, and now I'm back to that first person, but I need to get 2 people over from him. Okay, and now back to 30 feet away from him. You know, so she's kind of zigzagging across the room.
Yeah.
And then there started to be some light moaning to our left. I don't know if you were even aware of it.
I don't remember that.
some people moaning and like just starting to like either be sick or be sad. I don't know. Some sort of negative thing going on over there. And then a woman over to the right was doing like cat-like stretches and motions for a while. And she would curl up her back like a cat and then straighten it out and then like put one arm forward like it was a leg and shake it like a cat.
Huh. Okay. So,
yeah, she was having an experience. But you still seemed bored. We kept giving each other like these complacent thumbs ups.
That was our communication for a while. Thumbs up, still doing good.
So, yeah, everything's fine. Pretty normal. Kind of bored.
One of the first physical sensations I felt was this roving dead spot in my body where like I just, I wouldn't feel parts of me.
Oh.
I would feel like, oh, that's weird. Generally where my kidney is, it just feels like it's all numb right now, like it had fallen asleep. So that's,
that doesn't seem good.
That's a little disconcerting. And then, oh, now my groin, I can't feel it.
Do you feel like I can usually feel your kidney?
No, just like that area, like where you normally have...
just some sense of self.
Yeah, the proprioception of your body being there and functioning. All of a sudden, it feels like a dead arm, essentially, like when your arm goes to sleep.
Right.
So those little patches are working their way across my body. Like, huh, okay, so that's something.
Maybe this is death coming from me. Very interesting.
And I think I clued you in at some point, like, okay, I'm starting to feel it a little bit.
So I was just sitting there kind of trying to meditate, and you started leaning over and saying, basically, I see shapes. And then you tell me, like, what the different shapes were.
Mm-hmm.
But for a while there, it just sounded like you were kind of watching the intro to Saved by the Bell.
They also finally started music.
Yes. So for the first half hour, maybe... they were playing the sound of a stream and birds, which was lovely. I really liked it.
Oh, yeah.
But then eventually, you could tell they wanted to take you on this sort of dramatic journey. So they had to turn to like some dramatic music.
Yeah, there was a long playlist and the songs all seemed pretty long, too.
Yeah.
I mean, time is all relative when you're in the midst of this thing. So
the grandmother.
It's hard to know exactly how long anything was happening.
Also, a lot of the songs were about ayahuasca.
Yes.
So just, that surprised me.
Yeah, there were a lot of songs where ayahuasca was a lyric or they'd sing it repeatedly.
Right. A lot of the latter. A lot of just ayahuasca and then singing, you know.
It almost was turning into like a lounge song or something. Right.
So you finally felt something at 9:38.
Oh, is that when I told you? Okay. Uh-huh.
So you had
a phone in there. They had discouraged us from bringing phones.
I did. I wasn't using my phone much. I just had my watch on.
Ah, got it.
Yeah. Yeah, so you told me you were leaden in the chest. You had vivid colors when you closed your eyes.
Yeah, that was the next physical sensation after the little dead patches is I would just feel my head weighed down, my chest weighed down. And yeah, it felt like... lead. And it was so weird. If I struggled to lift my head, then all of a sudden it became very easy. And then there was this weird mismatch between that whole sensation that, oh, you can't lift your head and, oh, you just did.
You did it.
Yeah. Huh. And so I can see how it would quickly lead to an out of body experience too. Because of that disparity. But then I'd look up at you and, oh, weird. And then thump, my head would just kind of hit the mattress again.
Yeah. So it took you about 90 minutes from when you drank it.
That sounds about right. Yeah. And about what they had predicted for how long it takes to really start taking effect. And I remember I did start feeling nauseous. And I was thinking, okay, well, I don't want to be the first one to throw up. But I feel
that's
like
so funny.
This is starting to build up. And at some point, I think I was feeling nauseous enough that I thought, okay, I should get near the Amigo in case I need to use him. And so I repositioned myself and I had my head over the bucket for a while just in case, because I thought it was coming, like, oh, okay, here it comes. And I was already hearing other people starting to puke. So, all right, I'm not going to be the first one because they're already throwing up.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't coming. So I just kind of laid down next to the Amigo. Again, I'm feeling really heavy. And so I spent a good chunk of the evening, I think, you can verify, in that pose.
Oh, yeah. Where your head was down by the foot of your bed, so to speak.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. So long. And so long to where I worried.
My whole body is on the bed, except for my head, which is just kind of slumped down on the floor. And I can't really move from it. So this is where it got to the bad stage of ayahuasca. So everyone has a different experience, and every night you have a different experience. So it's really hard to tell anybody, like, here's exactly what's going to happen with ayahuasca. But it does seem pretty uniform that you start out, at least if the music is giving you nice little ocean sounds, you get these kind of visions of crashing waves, and everything is interlaced with these intricate patterns, almost H.R. Giger-like.
Totally H.R. Giger-like, absolutely.
The guy who did the Alien designs.
Oh, okay.
So that kind of thing where there's repeated segments, and again, that spirograph, like overlapping of shapes. But when I was in this pose where I was face down, I also started getting hit with these just waves of almost pure emotion that was joined by these various images. So one thing I realized was, and I think I told you this later, I realized I couldn't move the camera around in my head.
Yes.
So if I was seeing something and I wanted to like kind of view it from a slightly different angle, this pattern or shape or whatever it may be, I would try to kind of will myself to, oh, I'm going to adjust this. Nope. Mm-hmm. No control over that. And so when I got down on my belly, I felt like I was looking down and I would see sort of the edges of things happening, but I couldn't move my head up.
Oh, how strange.
It was too heavy. And I knew it was happening like where things are supposed to happen above
like
you.
Like a video of a camera that's fallen on the ground.
That's a perfect way of describing it. And so, yeah, I would see sort of the edge of some action happening, but I couldn't like get myself to angle up towards it. And I felt so
strange.
Nauseous and heavy.
Well, that's really interesting because we heard about iboga that a lot of people see a screen, and Jerry saw a screen. So they'll either see a TV screen or a movie screen, and then everything that is happening on that. And I wonder if, for some reason, these plants have that effect on you where you kind of can't control the POV, and then maybe the brain justifies, oh, well, that's because this is a proscenium. We can't get past it.
Oh, maybe.
It will stay like this.
Maybe. I think before I got into the heavy, dark stuff, I think they did finally call for the second cup.
Yes,
ayahuasca.
They did. At 10 p.m., they called for the second drink.
Yeah, this is before it had really hit me hard when they called for the second cup. So everyone got up and I got in line with you. Mm-hmm. You were in line for your
second. Yeah, I felt like I could do another 10. Like, I was having a good, important experience, but at the same time, I felt like I could go deeper.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my vision was kind of smeary already, so it felt like being drunk. Mm-hmm. And I was wobbling a lot as mm-hmm. I walked. And I was kind of looking at other people like, oh, are you all feeling as loopy as I am? Because I would just feel my body kind of constantly swaying. My legs would almost give out for a second. I have to kind of recollect myself. Ugh. And I remember thinking like, whoa, this looks so creepy right now because the lights are down. They've got a little altar with burning candles. And so I'm seeing everybody in relief of the, you know, these candle flames. And we're all waiting in line for this ceremony. And there's a shaman. I was like, oh, this is everything they warned me about.
Yeah.
And that was kind of exciting. I also realized I had to pee again.
Uh-huh.
We'd all been instructed to hydrate. You couldn't eat past 2 o'clock, but we didn't been instructed to hydrate. So I'd been drinking lots of water. So I'm thinking, I got to pee. And I'm just really starting to feel the nausea as I'm standing up there.
Sure.
And I'm swaying crazily and like realize my head is dragging everywhere. I was like, okay, self. Uh-huh. I think this first cup is really starting to set in.
Uh-huh.
Feeling a little nauseous. I think I need to get back. Yeah, all this happened before I started to try to puke in the Amigo. As I was getting pretty close to the front of the line, like, you know what? I think I'm good. You know?
Good for you.
Let's just go to the bathroom. This is the first night. I'm going to have other chances to try this. I don't need to break any records.
That's great. So I was standing in line and I turn and I see Ross leave the line and I'm like, whoa, this guy firewalked 7 times. If he is going back and not taking a second cup, he has to be in his cups.
I remember thinking like, I don't need to dial this 1 to 10 just yet.
Right. Yeah.
So
when but I was proud of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I went to the bathroom. I went and laid down. Okay. And that's when I got face down because I thought, okay, you're going to puke now. And that didn't happen. But then I was just stuck in that downward facing pose.
So I got worried when you were in that pose because it went on so long that I poked you with my pen twice just to see if I could at least get a little muscle reaction.
I have no
nothing. Your
of
body
that.
Was dead. It had no reflexes.
Oh, no. How long did that go for? I'm curious because that was the bad period.
Yeah. I want to say like 70 minutes.
Okay.
It was a lot.
I remember every now and then in that pose, I would think, oh shoot, Carrie needs to know I'm okay. And I'd kind of move my limbs a little bit, and like I would have like a thumbs up, but I'd realize, oh, it's pointed towards my hip. She's not even gonna see that.
I finally saw a flicker in, I can't remember if it was your thumb or your foot.
I would move my foot. That was one thing I could do without too much difficulty. Like, okay, right foot's gonna go up on the left ankle, and there we go.
Yeah, okay, I saw that.
And okay, now I can go back. Okay, she saw that.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, good.
Because I was thinking like, oh no, she's going to be worried because I'm not moving.
Yeah, that worked. But it was really funny because later we were comparing notes, and to me it was like I witnessed, you know, this involuntary muscle tick. And to you it was like this gargantuan effort
to speak to me. I will let her know I am still in here. So the major visual motif for that first night was this black and white checker pattern that I kept seeing, like the
heart. Ooh, like Donald in Mathland.
Ooh, Donald in Math Magic Land, one of my favorites. Yeah, yeah.
Me too.
Ooh, I like the reference.
Although I clearly didn't know the name.
You know, it's funny. It's so easy to make film references to explain these things that you see. But yeah, it was like that Harlequin floor like you see on the See's Candies shops,
yeah, sure.
If anyone's familiar with that. Or I kept thinking of Thief and the Cobbler. It was a film by the animator Richard Williams. It's epic because he's one of the world's best animators. He's the director of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He's known for animating on ones. Instead of doing one drawing every other frame, 24 frames per second, which usually you can do most of the time in animation, get away with 12 drawings per second. He like insists all the time on drawing 24 frames per second.
Oh, wow.
And he did this film that came before Aladdin. It was like a, you know, Middle Eastern story about this thief and the cobbler. So it had all these elaborate drawings of these patterns rotating in space. And you just think like, oh my goodness, it must have been so hard for people to draw this.
Yeah.
Also, to make another film reference, it reminded me a bit of the animation, The Secret of Kells. It's about these illuminated manuscripts, the famous Book of Kells. And only a few times in the movie do you actually see them animating, but you see all this intricate line work and it's moving around and it comes alive. And it's so cool.
Cool.
But anyway, so that's what I was seeing. I was seeing these checker patterns and they'd have colors and they'd be rotating around and growing and shrinking. And it was mostly like a two-dimensional plane, but there were elements that would pop out or be in three dimensions. So that was like my primary visual motif, but other things would pop in. So I'd see, I can't remember the order these came in, but for example, the checker patterns would turn green and orange. And for some reason, they were reminding me of Las Vegas and like all this glitz and show. And I just remember being overcome by this emotion of like everything is cheap and meaningless. And I was just kind of disgusted by reality. And so that was one of those kind of pure emotions I felt, was just this disgust and everything is just so, ugh, like superficial. Yeah. Uh-huh. And it wasn't attached to any people. I wasn't seeing any humans in these visions.
Right.
Except there was this odd interlude where I did see like scrolling web pages. And it would be like a Facebook feed or it would be a news article coming up. And I remember I would feel these emotions of controversy. Like I felt ayahuasca was forcing me to feel uncomfortable about what I was seeing. That it would be something racially charged or something about a serial killer or something. And I, like at one moment, I would feel like a whole range of emotions from approval to disgust. And it was weird because like I felt them all at the same time. Yeah, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like this kind of quantum superposition where all states are active and it hasn't collapsed yet into a single one. So that was confusing and weird and I didn't like it. And I think in this first trip, I was trying to really control my experience and see just how present is the real Ross, in quotes,
right,
and how much can he curtail this. I would say like maybe 40 to 60% of the time I could feel the real me aware of what was happening, but there was also another me that was totally lost in this. It was weird. It faded in and out.
Right. So you said that to me. You said there's a part of me that's talking to you and there's a part of me that's watching this happen.
Yeah. I remember when I would talk to you, I felt like I was three layers deep. So I'd be like kind of sending a message up and then I would hear it arrive outside of me and say something to you. And be like, oh, that's so weird. And then I'd hear your response. And then there'd be this delayed reaction. Every now and then you'd respond to the things I'd tell you was like kind of a witty response or a quick quip. And I would lay back down. And this was after I was out of the bad slump.
Uh-huh.
This is once I'd reoriented back the normal way. But yeah, I would lay back down on my pillow, and then maybe 8 to 10 seconds later, I would start laughing at what you just said.
And then I thought you were just off on a new moment laughing to yourself. But then at some point you were like, what you said was funny. And it had been
I'm on a delay.
Yeah, it had been like half a minute or something. So I had like forgotten, you know, what we had been talking about. It was pretty funny.
Hilarious.
So during all this, I was doing a little bit of breath work, but I couldn't totally remember how to do it consistently by myself.
Mm.
And another little thing we've been learning to do an investigation we can't tell you about.
Oh, yes. An ongoing investigation.
But doing both of those and then like meditating. So all just sort of peaceful, self-centered stuff.
Quiet.
Self-centered. Not in that way.
Quiet things.
Yeah, quiet things. And I did get a message.
Oh.
Yes. So I was just opening my mind
Mother
up.
Ayahuasca reached
Yes!
You.
Mother Ayahuasca or my subconscious mind, one, the other, or both, said, you were chosen to be on this earth.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. Clear
message.
She didn't
message. Say any more. She didn't say what for or anything. And actually, I felt like that was the point. Like, you're just chosen to be here and enjoy this life. And everybody who's here is supposed to be here and enjoy the life. You don't need, like, external additional purposes. That's how it felt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that sounds like the kind of message you'd get from Mother Ayahuasca.
Totally.
Yeah, I don't think that first night that I had any big meaningful revelations that I can think of. And I think it was really just me trying to explore the bounds of how much control I had, which wasn't much, and it would get really frustrating sometimes. And another thing that I would see were these vignettes, these little tableaus where I was in this enclosed space and I felt like I was almost a camera or like viewing a screen almost, but I was inside this little space and there'd be something really close to me and everything is just ever so slightly moving. Mm-hmm. And even the camera is slightly moving. So you're always just kind of drifting. There's a little bit of a camera drift. And any objects you're seeing, they're also slightly moving, either rotating or waving or doing something. And everything has this added layer. Like the closer you look at it, like a fractal, there's like additional layers of detail inside of it. So I remember I would see weird vignettes, like there was a playing card and it had a face that kind of looked like a Jack Nicholson as the Joker sort of face.
I was so scared of him as a kid.
Oh, really? I remember it had bright green hair and a white face and like a red, like wickedly smiling mouth. It, but it would be on a playing card, but it's looking at me and it's just ever so slightly moving and alive. And then in the background, there'd be all these other objects. And that was that emotion of just like, this is sickening. So I'd be I'm just grossed out. Oh, but I can't move. And I'm just experiencing this now.
Yeah, that's where you have to wonder, is it just that you're feeling nauseous and then your brain's trying to justify the nausea through a narrative?
Yeah,
or
is it something like
that? Is it totally independent?
But eventually I did, after having a bunch of that really unpleasant stuff, I had enough composure. I thought, okay, this would probably be better if I could get back on my back. Mm-hmm. And off of my belly. And so I did. I forced myself, pushed myself up. I'm like, oh, I can do this. I can do this. And then thump, fall backward on the pillow. And after that, it was all just kind of pleasant, nary fairy. And I was giving you little updates on what was going on in my head.
Yeah, you were still able to talk to me.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And as I would talk, I would kind of like see the words coming out. And occasionally, they would just disappear. So I'd see the stream of words coming towards you as I was talking to you, and then like, oh shoot, I lost the thing I was gonna say.
Oh, it was funny too, you said that a few times, like, sorry, I know what I'm saying didn't make sense, but you had finished an entire coherent thought.
Okay.
When you said that. And okay, that happened a few times.
Oh, okay, good. Because yeah, I was really worried, like, if meaning was coming out of what I was
right.
saying.
What it felt like was the feeling of finishing a thought was actually what was triggering the feeling of forgetting a thought.
Mm.
Because it would be like right after you completed a concept. Then
okay.
You'd be like, I'm sorry. And I was like, no, that made perfect sense.
Well, good. It was a real effort to speak. So I was giving you little updates as I could. And for every one thing I told you, there were maybe 8 things I vetoed and thought, oh, I'll remember this later. I was really worried about forgetting all of this.
Sure.
You're here for so many hours.
So I was encouraging you the next day, try to let go a little more in your follow-up trips, because it did seem like you were really in your head for this one.
Totally.
Trying to be there for us, the listeners.
Yes. And so that was my goal, definitely going into the second night.
Hey, this is Griffin McElroy.
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
And we've got a new podcast on Maximum Fun called Wonderful.
Wonderful.
It's an enthusiast podcast where we talk about things that we're excited about and things that you're excited about.
Things like overalls,
24-hour Sudafed,
the grand prize game,
the fact that wombats use their butts to kill predators,
the soundtrack to the movie Dick Tracy,
the beach potion we call Bud Light Lime.
All these things and more every Wednesday, and we'll also talk about things that you're excited about.
You can find us on MaximumFun.org or iTunes or wherever. I don't know. Just search Wonderful. Google it, you'll probably get there.
So while you were going through all this, I started to get a little bit of a headache that was in the area where I sometimes get a migraine. So I was like, uh-oh. As you may know, listener, you have to nip these things in the bud. So I got up and I thought, okay, like I can go back to my room, right? I'm the soberest person here. I'm the only sober person here. I can go. But they had told us, don't wander off.
Right.
Don't go back to your rooms. Come on, there's got to be an exception for me, right? Okay, so I start walking back to my room, not running, just walking slowly. And this helper comes running after me. And I mean, running.
Okay.
And comes up to me and she says, real glossy eyed, I'd like to invite you back to the ceremony.
That's one of the creepiest things you can say to another human being.
So we'll call her Carla. She was a brunette woman, probably in her early 30s, very sweet. And I said, thank you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you run after me. I need to go get my migraine medicine, but I haven't taken the plant medicine at all. And she said, but you need to go back to the ceremony. And I was like,
she's been given one job. She's right. Going to do it.
And I'm like, well, I could get a migraine, and if I get the medicine, it'll stop it before it starts. She's like, okay, then I'll go with you.
All right, compromise.
Sure, except I said, but aren't you on the plant medicine? She says, yes.
I wonder now, how much she took.
She told me it was a small amount. I talked to her about it later.
But she's clearly affected.
But she's on the medicine, and now I'm babysitting her.
Totally.
So I'm walking back to my room.
And it's a pretty long walk to your room. You're not as close as I am.
Room 69 is not close. And I'm walking to my room. And granted, she's done plant medicine a lot. So she's, you know, she can walk certainly better than you would have been able to. But still, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm room 69. And she's like, 69. Okay, so we've got 63. And I'm like, yep, this way, over here. Okay, great. So she's following me to my room and I'm trying to make small talk. And I did ask her how much she'd taken and she said they take a smaller dose.
Okay.
And then we get to my room and she's like, I'm just going to stand out here and look at the stars. And I'm like, yeah, I bet you are. So she stands out there and looks at the stars. I really quickly text Drew like, oh, this is going so long. I'm so sorry. Ross is fine. Bye. Get my migraine medicine, go out. She's still staring at those stars. And I talked to her about those locusts.
Oh,
those
yeah.
6-inch locusts. She said they're called langosta.
Langosta.
And I said, oh, yeah, though, that makes sense. Sounds like locust. And she said it means lobster.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then I thought, oh, right, huh. That means lobster. So wait, does it mean lobster and locust? Are you just high? So I still don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Maybe it's a nickname.
So then I get back to our bed and you have not moved a muscle.
Yeah, that was when I was still face down. I do remember there were a couple times where I would lift my head up and, you know, struggle to look over. And I remember once not seeing you there.
Okay.
But my vision was hazy enough that I wasn't 100% sure you weren't there.
Maybe I looked through her.
Yeah, but I was like, oh, I don't think she's there. But then I was like, oh, got to get the head back. Thump.
I decided to try to take a nap at that point.
Okay.
Because this is going very long.
Yes.
We got there at 5 p.m. and I am the only sober person and it is now after 11.
And you're listening to everyone puke?
Puke, vomit, yeah. Puke.
Cry, lots of crying.
Lots of crying. Yeah, this poor girl in front of us was crying and crying and crying and the helpers kept coming over and reassuring her and then she started laughing, laughing, laughing. And at first it felt good for her that I was like, shut up.
Yeah, the emotions are pure. You essentially just get like the full version of sadness. Or spoiler alert, I never got hit with pure sadness. And I was so purely happy about that.
In because, this trip.
Right.
Right.
Or any night, I'll spoil it. But I never had the emotion of just pure sadness.
Oh, okay. It was something else. Because you had some bad experiences, but they were of a different flavor.
But it was never sadness. But clearly other people were wrestling with sadness.
And, right.
Oh, they would just be bawling.
Well, at 11:43, when we had been there for over 6 hours.
Yeah.
They asked for a third drink.
Okay.
And I was like, are you fucking serious?
I didn't even hear that one. You told me, hey, they're asking for the third drink now.
Good God. Yeah, I did. I said, you don't want a third drink, do you? And you're like, no.
I was in a much gentler place at that point, but I thought, I'm good for tonight.
Yeah.
I'm ready for this to wear off.
Yeah, let's start all over.
Yeah, exactly. Not happening.
So one woman got up and was in line, and she was laughing hysterically in line, just doubled over, having such a good time. But there were probably only like 20 people who got the third drink.
Okay.
4 people had vomited at that point. Not that many. I think you heard a lot of vomits from the same people, I think.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, some of them were really involved. They were getting their bodies heavily into this vomiting. So another thing that happened to me is that I would get these weird compulsions that would come into my brain. Like I would think of doing something and then I'd be like, huh, that's silly. And then I would just keep thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it. And I'd be like, okay, no, think about something else. Nope. So the first one that hit me was, huh, wouldn't that be silly if you got up and did push-ups?
Yeah.
Right now, like, oh, that's ridiculous. No, I'm not going to do that. And I just keep thinking, but you could do push-ups now. Yep, you totally could. There's nothing to stop you.
So I remember you saying before, you knew that, well, there's only one way to make this voice stop telling me to do this, and that's just do it, and then at least it'll be over.
Right.
This so reminds me of OCD, but it's like happy OCD. Because the little voice is like, did you check the stove? Are you sure? Because I don't remember checking the stove. Did you? You could go back. And then you're like, I know I checked the stove, but I'm just going to go fucking check it. So you shut the hell up.
Right, right. So that's what I did. So I flipped around and I did push-ups.
Yeah. You said, I have to do something stupid. And then you did the push-ups and then you laid down and said, that was so stupid.
But mission accomplished. I stopped thinking about it.
You also said around that point that breathing had stopped being automatic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was a major point, especially when I was face down, is that at times I'd realize like breathing had stopped becoming an involuntary action and I had to actually think about breathing. So I'd catch myself think, when's the last time I breathed? And so then I, you know, like have to breathe deeply and okay, let's get some oxygen. Okay.
Man.
So, yeah, it just became a refrain, like, okay, breathe. And I definitely carried that with me into the second night, remembering, okay, you just got to breathe.
I wrote down around here that you were laughing to yourself, but now I realize you were laughing at me.
Another compulsion that came to my mind was, oh, you should hug Carrie.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be great if you hugged Carrie?
He got up on one arm and you said, I have to do something else stupid. Can I give you a hug?
You know, I don't think I called it stupid. I thought I called it like a crazy thing or something.
Oh, maybe it was crazy. Can I ask you a crazy thing? Maybe it was crazy. You called the other thing stupid.
Yeah. I think I was conscious enough that I wouldn't have wanted to say it was stupid. But I remember I had looked over and you were napping. And so I was like, okay, we'll just forget about it. Lay down. But nope. So I like woke you up. And so you're like, oh, okay. So we gave each other a hug. And then I could go back to laying down and letting my mind wander around at other things. At some point, I did think they had mentioned that you could go out to the stars. And I think you had told me that the stars are really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go see the stars. So I got up, grabbed the Amigo just in case, and walked out to the wooden deck out there, got down to the cement. And there were other people, some of them with their buckets, leaning over the bucket.
Looking up at that big bluish black thing.
Big bluish black thing. So I'd look up and it was all very smeary, but I was like, oh, wow, stars. Just kind of pivoting on my feet, looking around every which way. And Orion was the first thing I recognized, it always is. And it was right above the lip of the building itself. So I kept looking at that, looking around. And Jerry had told us about leaping to stars, like that's something you can do, like pick a star and just jump for it. So I tried to kind of do that and it was a non-starter. Maybe it was wearing off by that point. If anything, that night the stars felt flatter to me. Like,
that's interesting.
It felt more like a dome-like projection rather than actual stars in the sky.
Oh, I did tell you when you get on the ayahuasca, if you have a flying experience, to look back and tell me if the earth is flat.
Oh, okay.
But you didn't. I don't think that ever happened.
No, sorry.
But this feels like confirmation.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe the flat earth is onto something.
Research flat earth.
So I tried laying down for a bit, but that wasn't as exciting. So I got back up on my feet and I just kept pivoting around. But there were other people doing stupid things outside, so I wasn't the only one. And people were out in the darkness too, and you couldn't see very far. So every now and then someone would come walking back toward me and they'd be all smeary, and it would be this shape. And then you'd stare at it for a while trying to figure it out. Like, okay, the shape is moving and it's got fuzzy, feathery edges, but I'm going to figure this out. And then next thing you know, they're like right next to you as they're walking past you. Right. Like, whoa. So I stayed out staring at the stars for a while and then eventually wandered back in.
Well, I was inside having my own journey. I had taken the tincture and I found that mostly I was having the exact same experience as if I hadn't taken anything. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird because it was supposed to be exactly the same.
Exactly the same or stronger, depending on which philosophy you follow.
Well, that placebo did not work out so well.
But I did have one real moment of clarity that might have been while you were outside. So I had gone kind of from this elated experience of like, wow, this is so cool. Like, what a cool experience to be around all these people who are building a memory they'll remember the rest of their lives, and I get to be here.
Yeah,
and,
that's the spirit.
Yeah, and then spending time in meditation and getting that little sentence from my own mind, and I was feeling like really cool. And then at other times, it would overstay its welcome. The thing's too long if you're sober. And so I would go from like, this is amazing, to this is very silly. And one of the this is very silly parts that's crystal clear was the young shaman coming through the room, and this like very dramatic sort of house music was playing. And he was walking out the main glass doors, and I could see him walking out in his woven robes. And I was like, you're just a guy in like your 20s, this white guy from the States in your 20s who came to Central America. You probably did a bunch of drugs in the States. Then you came here and now this is the drug you do. But we're supposed to be impressed that this is like your job now, because you're taking people on journeys where you don't even talk to them. They lay on blankets in the middle of nowhere.
Whoa.
You're, oh, okay. Okay, buddy. And then it would just like snap back and I'd be like, you know what? No, this is pretty cool.
That was just the tincture talking.
Which one?
The wild one with gesticulations.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh, I was gesticulating during that bit.
Yeah, sorry, everybody, you missed. Carrie had some strong body language there.
So, anyway.
Yeah, I felt it slowly wearing off, but I was still very much kind of trapped a few layers in my head. When they offered that third cup, I was like, no way.
Yeah, are you kidding?
Forget it. Yeah, eventually we did.
Did they offer four total or just three?
Just
that night?
Three. Okay. It seems like they always cap out at three. Okay. So yeah, the music kept playing and the songs are talking about ayahuasca, an interesting mix of kind of native sounding music, a lot of lyrics in Spanish, a lot of singing about ayahuasca, a lot of kind of techno-y music. This is the kind of stuff you would expect to be played in a yoga studio or
on an ayahuasca camp.
Yeah, very much like the kind of music you'd hear at an ayahuasca camp. It was a kind of eclectic mix, but still of a family.
Probably if you went to like a sound bath.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. So if you're watching a lot of spiritual videos online, you're going to
hear. If you're watching Gaia.com, you've heard some of this music.
Some of this music.
So finally at 2:44 a.m., they turn the lights up. 2:44 is 9 hours and 14 minutes after we got there.
Oh, and it was supposed to, like, on the schedule that gave a more honest appraisal, they still said it should be done by 12:30.
Yeah.
And so there was a long period where we're just sitting there going, end this already.
Yeah.
Come on, everybody's...
Stop it.
Everybody's finishing up. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's one or two stragglers. I went out to look at the stars again. This time they weren't moving around. So,
okay, good.
Yeah, I feel like I'm almost sober. I'm still a little like woozy on my feet, but I'm getting there. It's like, okay, I'm ready to just go back to my room and fall asleep now.
And I'm feeling a mixture of annoyed and delighted that they felt they could tell me that this would be exactly the same. All
right. So then what happened? They just send us home?
Well, you grabbed my notes and wanted to write to see if your hand worked. It did.
Yay.
I have a little note here. This is Ross, just checking to see if I can write. Yep.
All right.
We all like looked around. They made sure everybody was okay to walk. Everybody could stand up okay. I was like, yeah, I'm good. I think I can go. I think I'm all right.
Oh, another one of the weird compulsions I had gotten was to stand on my head.
Oh, yeah. I think I was asleep during that.
Yeah,
right?
So I did that for a while. Sure.
I'm surprised they let you do that.
Yeah, no one came over. Oh, I'm missing one of the most important moments.
Uh-oh.
I was whispering to you while I was still in my, you know, hazy state. And I can't remember. I was telling you about something going on in my head.
Oh, you said you wanted to be a dentist.
Did I?
Yeah, that you were going to quit your job and become a dentist.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
Okay. So I do have some recollection, which is also interesting, just that I was forming memories during all this. But as I was talking to you at one point, Sandy came by and she whispered to you.
Yes.
And, then,
and I threw you under the bus.
Did you?
Yes. She came by and she was like, we actually don't talk during ceremony. And I was like, oh, yeah, he keeps saying things to me.
Well, it's true. I was trying to report my experience.
I know, but I just got that immediate, like, I've been called out by the teacher. It's my classmate's fault.
And I am a terrible whisperer. Mm. She came over to me and I'm still very much woozy at this point. And so I kind of get up on my elbow to hear her. And she says, you know, we really need you to respect the sacred silence. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you. I was mortified. I felt so embarrassed. Like, oh, I've been making all this noise and everyone's been hearing. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. And so my head's swimming around. And again, it's in this kind of obsessive mode. And I'm thinking, I need to tell her as soon as this is all over. I need to thank her for telling me this, because I was aware. And there was even part of me that was saying, no, you shouldn't be whispering right now. But you just kept doing it. Because you didn't really like
because you show up so they don't have to.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking, okay, I need to tell her I'm so appreciative, because you know, that really shut me up and that's what I needed to hear. And I wish she told me earlier.
She is Mother Ayahuasca.
And then I was thinking, okay, when I need to what's her name? And so then I got obsessed over what her name was. It's like, I know this. I should know her name. And I was totally wrong, because I was thinking it started with like a CH. And we're not using her real name, but it didn't start with a CH sound. So I'm like, Chloe? No. Crystal? No, that's definitely not it. Chrissy? It might be Chrissy. She could be Chrissy. I don't know. But I really need to thank. So I spent a good 20 minutes just thanking her internally in my head. Because that was so great of her to tell me to observe the sacred silence. Of course I should be respecting the sacred silence.
Ross!
So when they finally had turned up the lights a bit and everyone's sort of stretching, looking at each other and sort of smiling, you know, we're all coming out of this thing. Finally they say, okay, everybody, well, let's come back and form the circle again. And so we go back to sit in front of the shaman.
Yep.
And take our previous positions. And you know what? Time to unpack this.
Yeah. You know, it's only 2:44 a.m. Let's see how everybody did.
We're 2 hours past what should have been the end point. And
at the latest.
So he starts telling us about, you know, you get these messages and they're so important. And you learn things. The mother knows what you need.
Mm.
And, you know, she finds that spot inside of you. And sometimes it takes a while, but she'll find what you need to release.
Mm.
And so he does his whole like introductory talk again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tells us how great the mother is, how it's not him. Don't think that it's him. It is Mother Ayahuasca. It is the vine. It is the grandma. Okay, got it. Cool. Yep. Mm-hmm. I would like to go to bed.
And tomorrow it's going to be a new experience. And I know you're all going to be really tired tomorrow. And I'm thinking, yes, if we keep drawing this out, stop. But he does the turning to the people next to him. Is there anything I forgot? What else should we say?
There's got to be more.
Long pause. Does does anybody have anything that they want to share? And I think, no,
not now.
No sharing.
We have a whole week.
This is a bad time for it. But no, people started sharing and asking questions.
They got to share. And there's a real showboaty quality to a lot of the sharing at Rhythmia.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Not everybody, but some people really get up and are like, oh boy. Long guttural pauses. I just really worked through what I think. And you're like, oh God, get to the point. Come on. You can do this. Come on. There are 100 other people here. Gather your thoughts.
The only way out is through.
Yeah.
So we sat there over an hour.
So we went through who had had a pinta, who had had a consult, who had had a body.
I definitely had a pinta.
And who had had a nada, which is you take the thing and you go to sleep. There isn't a name for you took the thing and nothing happened, but you didn't go to sleep.
Right.
No name for that, which is weird, which I guess is what I had.
We'll call that a day nada.
Great. So that went on for an hour. That was terrible. Also, I forgot to tell you, Carla asked me if I had run it by the shaman that I was going to take my migraine meds while I was on the tincture. And I just said, yes.
As far as you're concerned, yeah.
I had told the actual medical doctor on the facility, so I didn't feel like I needed to be like, hey, random dude, I'm going to take some migraine medicine, even though I'm also drinking this water.
Right,
okay?
Right.
Okie doke.
So they finally let us go, what? Was it like, I think 3:40 when I got back to my room?
Probably something like that, yeah.
Ugh. It went on for, 10 hours, really close to 10 hours.
And so at that point, I was like, okay, I think the best way I can serve this investigation is to let Ross sleep during the morning, and I'll go to all the morning classes.
Yeah, because there's like a 9 o'clock class.
Yes, how does anybody go to these?
Not to mention like the 7 o'clock yoga session. Mm-hmm. No way.
Which even I am probably not going to be up for.
Right, yeah.
And I have taken nothing. So we made a deal at this point. You felt safe enough to go without me, especially
to the future
since we
sessions.
Could, right. And especially since we couldn't talk to each other. So we decide, okay, I'll go to like all the talks up until lunch, and then we meet up, and then in the evening you do the plant medicine.
Yeah.
So then the next day we did a bunch of cool activities that we will tell you about, but we also basically recorded the
episode that
you just heard.
Because I wanted to make sure I had recounted everything about my first experience before I had my second experience, because I was really worried. You know, you've got 10 hours of experience and maybe 6 of that while you're actually on this drug. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get that all down on tape. Not that there's any tape involved in this recording process before I went into my second experience, but we did record. It was a great episode. You would have loved
God,
it.
God, you would have really. Boy, you guys, you're going to love this.
But we ended up leaving the SD card, that's what we actually record on, from our recorder at Rhythmia. It fell out of my pocket. Mm-hmm. We're going to tell you that story because that story gets wild.
Yeah.
But just remember that.
It becomes a critical moment in the Rhythmia journey that really shows some of Rhythmia's true colors.
Indeed. We'll tell you more of the story. Again, there's many parts to this. So we'll be back next time, the next day of our Rhythmia experience. And that's it for this episode.
Our theme music is by Brian Keith Dalton.
Our administrative manager is Ian Kramer.
This episode was edited by Victor Figueroa.
You can find us all over the place, but namely facebook.com/onrack. That's where you find videos of us staring at you like Brazzo.
Exactly.
Or photos of these investigations.
Did you also know there's a Max Fun LA Facebook group? Because there is. And we're going to go on a bird watching adventure on the 25th. And by we, I mean me, because I just remembered Ross can't go.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Oh No Podcast.
And you could leave us a review at iTunes. That helps us, keep our rating up, unless you leave us a bad review, in which case it brings our rating down, so don't do that.
And tell a friend about our show, or just invite them on a road trip and start playing episodes.
There you go.
And what are they going to do? Jump out of the car?
Exactly. Think about it.
You can support us in all of our investigations at MaximumFun.org/donate.
And remember,
Gato Montes ni ki aruna ni, la 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 la, la 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 la.
guarda, guarda, no. Cura, cura, cura nos. Ayuda, ayuda, ayuda nos. Guarda, guarda, guarda nos. Limpia, limpia, limpia nos. Cura, cura, cura nos. Guarda, guarda, guarda nos.
I'm Allegra Ringo.
And I'm Renee Colbert, and we host a podcast called Can I Pet Your Dog?
Renee, can I tell you about a dog I met this week?
I wish that you would. In turn, though, can I tell you about a dog hero?
May I tell you about a dog breed in a segment I like to call Mutt Minute?
Yeah, I would love that. Could we maybe talk about some dog tech?
Could we have some cool guests on, like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Nicole Byer, and Ann Wheaton?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I'm in.
You're on board? What do you say we do all of this and put it into a podcast?
Yeah, okay.
You think? All right. Should we call it, like, I don't know, Can I Pet Your Dog?
Sure.
All right. What do you say we put it on every Tuesday on Maximum Fun?
Or on iTunes. Sounds good to me.
Meeting's over.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.